Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Force Center, a show about Star Wars, pop culture, and the ultimate adventure, life itself. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok, and we are here for Cues of the Other. That's right, we still like talking about other things because life doesn't stop, even if Star Wars is back. I'm excited to get to it.
Yeah, me too as well. I'm excited to keep Other Center going. It's been wonderful to get all the feedback for people who are the same individual people saying, I'm excited you're talking about Star Wars again, and I'm excited that you're going to continue Other Center, where you talk about really anything from books to cats to your feelings about your parents. Other Center is a big umbrella. These questions that we're getting through are ones that we requested from our patrons before the strike even ended, because we have so many great questions. So we're going to keep going through them for a little while, and we'll see how Other Center develops. But right now, it's Cues of the Other, as Ken said. We want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4Center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And Ken, we have a recommendation.
We do. Hey, you know, the third phase of the High Republic has begun, but we want to take you back to the beginning of the second phase, because that's kind of where we're at, and recommend the book Star Wars, The High Republic, Path of Deceit. This is by Justina Ireland and Tessa Graddon. Start your journey whenever you feel it's time to start your High Republic Phase 2 journey with that book. And you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audiobook.
That is great. I am reading the book right now. I'm about halfway through as we record, and I'm enjoying it very, very much. And we'll see how long it takes me to read all of phase two. But now we have our ask. Ken, do you want to handle our ask?
I do want to handle our ask. And our ask is this. We would like you to consider subscribing to us on YouTube as we refocus over there. And don't forget our faces full time, starting with the November 28th or so. Dates don't mean anything to us these days. Our look at Ahsoka. You'll be able to see us as well as hear us. We still know there's a large percentage of listeners on the podcast, and we want to keep those listeners there in the podcast. Take us with in your car, everything. But hey, if you want to see our faces, which is a fun joke to make, but it's also a reality coming your way, you want to subscribe over on YouTube as well as some other stuff we might be cooking up. We are trying to get our subscriptions up over 7,500. We understandably lost some numbers during the strike. Some folks just want to hear some Star Wars talk and maybe even thought we had stopped and they went away. But we are happy to report the numbers are going back up and help us reach our goal if you want at 7,500 subscribers over on YouTube.
Excellent. A beautiful, concise ask. Well handled. We're going to move on to the Q's. Hopefully we have some A's for your Q's. We've got a big one, a difficult one, but maybe we'll have some fun as well, but we'll find out. How's that for a teaser? Stick around and see if we have fun. Anyway, this comes to us from our listener and patron, Rona Rivera Raman. And Rona asks, how do you reconcile or not reconcile when a person or company you admire has a viewpoint or belief that is contradictory to your own beliefs? Can you separate the art from the artist, as they say? Is a big question. I love the specificity with which Rona asks that we could be talking about a person or a company. And also, you know, a viewer belief contradictory to our own, which I think can mean lots of different things. It could be a small idiosyncratic thing too, like a big cultural agreed upon norm that's being challenged by a specific artist. So where do you go to start with this question, Ken?
You sent this out. You always send the rundown out with the questions before the show, but you sent this one out a little extra early because you were traveling or you had some plans. So I got to sit with this one for a while and I still don't know how I want to answer it. And I like what Rona said about, you know, your own beliefs. Cause you're right. Cause that could go a lot of spots and it's interesting. I'll even go here back in the day when I was growing up, I'll just say a little bit more sheltered and conservative views of the world based on ways I was raised, as we've discussed on other Center a lot. Hearing, some of the stuff George Lucas said back then made me kind of go, well, I'll just try to ignore that, right? Now I'm on the other side of it where I keep trying to tell people, you should listen to what George Lucas had to say. So there's a little bit of a turtle shell effect that happens, right, with that. But as it's changed and some of the stuff, Rona's not necessarily directly talking about some of the last few years where that horrible term cancel culture, which is so misunderstood, misused, and not exactly what we're talking about here specifically, but there are times when this has challenged me. And I find, Joseph, that there's some instances where it's just real simple because I'm not maybe directly involved, though, where I've seen all the Harry Potter films. I have not read the books. I've enjoyed them. I saw actually a lot of them in the theater. I have people in my life who love them. And when all the stuff kind of came out with J.K. Rowling and all that kind of stuff going on, it's like, that's a big X and no for me, but I wasn't in it. What if George Lucas had come out and said, you know what? Hey, I was looking back on some things. And I don't know. I like some of the stuff Hitler was saying. Then what does that do? And I don't know that answer sometimes. I don't know until you get there. And that's my starting point. I have some other examples, but I'll pitch it back to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think my starting point is that it is ever evolving. It is not for me one size fits all because it is the different relationships you have with, are we talking about one movie? Are we talking about a franchise? Are we talking about the creator? Are we talking about an individual actor? Mm-hmm. Are we talking about a creator like George Lucas who isn't involved anymore?
Right.
Are we talking about the past? And all those things are what I think about for my personal relationship. I don't think it's a one size fits all. I think it's an ever evolving question. And I think there are instances where I think most of the time it's just a personal thing. of I can't watch that movie with this person in it anymore. That's a personal thing. And then I think there are some things where it's at the inflection point of an issue that is active in the moment, impacting real people's lives. And I understand why for people, this choice becomes not just a personal choice, as Rona's asking about, but a point of activism. Because this particular active person or thing is injuring living human beings right now. But to stay closer to Rona's kind of personal thing, I can't think about it without cancel culture.
Yeah, no, fair. Yeah, absolutely.
And to me, that term is a uselessly large umbrella because we don't have we don't have a great cultural definition for it. And it can mean everything from fans don't like a movie to this person is tried, convicted, imprisoned for crimes. So it cannot be the same as you murdered a person and you didn't like Rise of Skywalker, and those are both cancel culture. Because I remember coming home from the first viewings of Rise of Skywalker to cancel J.J. Abrams. J.J. Abrams is over party trending on Twitter. And I think the man has taken some damage to his career. He hasn't had projects going forward. And some people would go, it's cancel culture. They canceled J.J. Abrams. But that can't be compared to crimes. Proven, tried, convicted. To have that large of a range in one phrase. A lot of people talk about it's not cancel culture, it's accountability culture. And I really like that. Because that is almost, that gets to just, it's a personal thing of it's a relationship. Had a conversation with a friend who didn't spend much time on the internet and just kind of had a cancel culture. You know, you put one foot out of place and people take your life away. And I just had a conversation with him about him because it was about a specific person who had a specific belief. And like, this person can't even say this belief. And I was like, well, do you agree with that belief? And they're like, no. I was like, do you agree with the person's right to publicly say it? And like, yeah. Do you agree with people's right to have a response to the thing that the person said? And the guy was like, yeah. I'm like, well, that's kind of what people are talking about with cancel culture is usually an artist, not usually, or a public person. Makes the choice to say something, and then humans make the choice to react. And that's what, to me, Rona's question is about, is all of us choosing for ourselves, how do we react to each individual instance? Not, I'm team cancel culture. I'm team anti-cancel culture. It's just like, it's so incredibly broad, it is to be useless. So I like thinking about it as accountability of people in the context of Rona's question. Artists make choices, and then we have the individual ability to respond. And sometimes that response is, I don't watch that old movie anymore. Or sometimes it is, I will not support that person's active new work right now. Or, you know, in the case of J.K. Rowling, I will agree with people who publicly speak out against it because it's actively harming someone.
Well said, as always. And yeah, without a doubt, to say it's a complicated question is an understatement, but it's a great one. It's one I think we have to ask ourselves. And yeah, I don't know how to fix what you're talking about the big umbrella. Like, do we release, like, you know, they have the threat level that came out after 9/11 Orange. Is there like a threat level to this kind of stuff? I'm joking, of course, but there's sometimes some conversations that I think worthy to have around that. But it is very personal, right? I think you know the lines that are either being crossed, and I don't know, you have to, there's some gray area to it. Like, I have a friend who's just outwardly against Amazon, against like Target. He gets mad at me when I shop, when he finds out I shop at Target. And then he goes to x.com to put these views out. And I don't want to do this, you know, whataboutism, or, you know, what about you, and figure, but it's like, there's an irony in it that I think he understands because that's the only way he has to get out of it. I really think Spotify is destroying the podcasting and music industry, making it hard to survive as artists. It's also something I use because otherwise you can't discover stuff. We talked about that last time out, discovering new artists and you know, hell, I've got a song on there that I'm trying to push over 1,000 listens so I can get 10 cents. But it's the only thing I got. And those are bigger questions. You know, the company thing we just went through, and maybe Rona was kind of, you know, getting some of the stuff too with Disney and strikes. And, you know, I don't think you and I or Jen have ever been under the impression that, that Disney wasn't a major corporation that owns the streets around Disneyland or the sky. You can't fly a plane over Disneyland. You always make the great joke slash poignant point of George Lucas did not start a not-for-profit business. In fact, he was already a millionaire at one point early on in his life. When Lucasfilm started, because of some other work and some of the stuff with Coppola. But, you know, I had higher hopes for Bob Iger during the strikes. I've been open that I like a lot of work Bob said and has done. I actually like parts of his, liked his book in general, and never to run for White House. I might consider voting for him. I had this vision that Uncle Bob would be the one that would go out on Buena Vista and go up and down and say, let me talk to y'all. Like, let me unite you. That wasn't the Bob we got. And it sucked, you know, it sucked, and it's changed my relationship with him going forward. So it all comes down to personal decisions about that.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying is we all have to live in the world that we live in, which even hearing myself say that sounds like an excuse, which I think is the right problem. It's like on one end of the spectrum, I can't control that that corporations, in my opinion, are too large, too powerful. My political opinion is that they should be broken up and that they should have much more government monitoring about what is legal and what isn't legal for corporations. They are too large. I don't want to use Amazon. But there is also a truth that it's there. It's society. So I think on one hand, I always want to give all of us, unless you're just going to go entirely off the grid, we're all touching something that we don't want to be touching at some point when you're talking corporations.
Yeah.
So that's on one side of it. On the other side of it is you use it as an excuse and be like, well, everybody shops at Amazon, so I don't care that this artist just murdered someone in front of me.
Yeah.
I'm going to tweet about how much I love their show.
Yeah.
Like, I think there are sometimes where people use that as an excuse to say, I'm not going to do any of this soul searching. I'm not going to have any sort of personal, you know, barometer. I'm just, it's just all fine.
Yeah.
So yeah, as always, somewhere in between those extremes is I think a healthy balance.
Yeah. Cause there's a reason calm, you know, not super reactionary approach to a lot of things in life, not just this issue, but it's like the both sides of politicians, they're all bad. You know what? You're not wrong. Except for one side seems to be hell bent on taking away the rights of a lot of people. Yeah. At the very least, I'm going to decide I have to shop there. I'm shopping on that side. So I agree with you that it easily could become an excuse.
Yeah. So yeah, I think for me, getting into some of the specifics of Rona's question about the art from the artist, for me, it is entirely dependent on the situation. Ken already brought up the big one, which is Harry Potter. I did read those books. They came into my life at the perfect time, and I love them. They're involved in some of Sarah and I's early dates. We both pre-ordered the book at the same time and stayed up late reading, I think, the sixth book, and went to those all those movies together. My wife was collected different the first book in different languages, and it was a fun thing to be like, ooh, can I find a Belgian version for my wife? Like, I liked that fandom. I liked that world a lot. And for me, I just don't touch it now. It's my personal choice because it is a purchase in the moment that gives money to J.K. Rowling. J.K. Rowling is actively harming the trans community, in my opinion, and actively harming people that I care about. And I'm not going to give money directly to that. And also then for me, it's just like, yeah, I don't get joy from it. I haven't rewatched the movies. I'm not going to. So for me, that's one of my, I made that choice. Other people can make other choices. I got my reasons. I don't want to separate the art from the artist because it's active. It's in the moment. Mm-hmm. I'm most likely never going to go give money to a film that Kevin Spacey is in. Mm-hmm. I got an old DVD of Seven, so old that you flip it. widescreen on one side and pan and scan on the other. I haven't watched it in a while, and I think it won't be the same. Mm-hmm. But I also don't feel like if I choose in my home to watch an ancient DVD, mm-hmm. I'm not actively giving money to someone who has victimized people in mm-hmm. the present.
Yeah, yeah. You can't change the past in terms of like influences or maybe even mm-hmm. joys, right? They're there. And I'll go to some of the big ones is I think I mentioned, was like one of the reasons I'm in stand-up comedy is Bill Cosby. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Mm-hmm. Bill Cosby himself, I fell off my couch laughing as a kid and I thought this is great. Like this, and I used to do his speeches in junior high and won speech tournaments doing his speeches. Now, also, by the way, looking back, probably shouldn't have been doing some of the characters I was doing. I grew up on the Cosby Show. I absolutely did. And so to have all that stuff comes out, like, and there's that great doc out there. We got to talk about Bill Cosby. I highly recommend it to everyone. It is, mm-hmm. It's a 360 degree discussion about that. So I can't go back and unseparate, but I always think about it, right? If his name pops up. Or something pops up. I love the Jerry Seinfeld documentary Comedian. It ends with a conversation with him. I just can't because it's there. It's there.
Mm-hmm. It's there.
Yeah. Even if I want to ignore it, it's there.
Yep. And I think a thing that comes up a lot in these conversations that I feel strongly about is, Cosby was tried and convicted and then, you know, technicality appeal, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Tried and convicted. So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But then there's people who people say innocent until proven guilty when they just don't want to separate the artist from the art. Mm-hmm. And I deeply believe innocent until proven guilty as a legal standard. But in terms of an individual's relationship to an artist, we are all able to make our own opinion based on the evidence we have. Mm-hmm. And I always try to be cautious. And, you know, if an accusation comes out, I try to read it. I try to think about it. I try to read between the lines. I try to see how many accusations come out. Mm-hmm. But I'm not waiting for a court to decide who I support. That's a legal standard, mm-hmm. not a personal standard. You know, mm-hmm. If I have a fight with a family member, I don't need to go to court to go, I'm not talking to them this week, you know, which is a jokey way to say it, but it's innocent before proven guilty is a legal standard. I know it is a moral standard up to a point as well. And you should read, you should research, mm-hmm. you should not just share a headline. You should read the actual article. All those things that we try to do when we talk about a space movie.
Yeah,
should be done with humans. There's way too much just repost and retweeting. I heard telephone game on the internet. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if an artist that you previously had a really positive relationship with has been accused of lots of terrible things and you do your own due diligence for yourself and come to a belief for yourself, it's your personal decision to react to it. To whether you're going to continue to support this person.
Yeah. Yeah. And it can be, again, it's sometimes easier than other times. This is why we're talking about the not case by case in a dismissive way, but just, I think I've danced around before, but mentioned, like, I'm a huge fan of Ryan Adams, huge fan. Music that changed my life, saved mm-hmm. my life type of songs. And then a series of allegations came out that, this is where it got difficult for me. The allegations were all, I was like, yeah, have you heard his music? That's him. This is part of the package. And I wasn't dismissive of the victims. It was just like, I wasn't surprised. So I was like, then some larger things came out about his marriage to Mandy Moore. And I was like, not good. And and I don't play them on my radio show. I try not to, you know, new music pops up every now and then, but it's like I try to pull back from that. But even then, when I was like, but you know, I'll just keep it to myself. I'll listen to this music myself. I can't not think about it. It comes up all the time. And that's where, so it's even when you're like trying to work around it, you're like trying to,
yeah.
It affects you personally. Yeah. That's the barometer, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think also what's been going on with the Buffyverse is telling it is a good look at this as well, that there's an audio either coming out or it has come out co-written by one of the cast members, kind of taking the ownership back. And the actors have all talked about it. You know, lots of stuff came out about Joss Whedon and people got to have their own opinion about it. Joss Whedon gave interviews and people got to form their own opinions and conclusions. But there's been a lot of discussion around that of like, yep, he's at the center of this, but all these other actors help make this what it is. And I feel like there's been a really good conversation around Buffy to say, we don't need to, if you don't want to watch Buffy or Angel or can't or Firefly anymore because you are upset with what Joss Whedon's behavior was behind the scenes, great. But also if you're somebody who that means a lot to you and you can just, and you don't want to throw away the contributions of the other artists, that is a choice as well. And this new audio is really interesting because it's basically a project that is manifesting that of all of these actors who are on Buffy playing new and different twists on their characters and truly actually literally taking ownership of those characters. So this very new way to truly separate the art from the artist and say in something like a television show, there isn't one artist, there's all these artists. And what if these artists took a different look at it, reframed it from their view?
Yeah, and it's just the reality of it too. Somebody like Shonda Trimsek, who passed away, the Star Wars costume designer. That's Firefly was where her kind of rise to prominence as a costume designer came from. And so there's some tributes and stuff in the works, and it's just like that you know, you kind of think about it. But I like this approach is you know, celebrating what is there from others and other contributors when possible.
Yeah.
When possible.
So we've been talking a lot about separating the art from the artist in basically modern things or things where the artist is still working today. How do you feel about stuff just made from a different time where the artist isn't living, any money is not going to support, you know, continued painful acts or beliefs by the artist? How do you feel about watching or enjoying or listening to either old things where it turned out that person was really awful, or even just cultural things have changed and that person espoused things that we don't believe in as a culture anymore, but so did everyone around them?
Yeah, I it's a wonderful discussion. I wish I had all the perfect words to say because it happens, you know, huge Beatles fan, right? John Lennon has some stories that you don't want to hear about Lennon, right? And it's just kind of, it's easy to pave over it, I guess. But I don't know. It was the times, like your grandpa Simpson is it's like anything in this conversation or the world can be used as an absolute shield and excuse from the reality and responsibility of it or the truth. You and I have discussed, you know, I just said it. I was up there as a like 12-year-old doing Bill Cosby speeches of black kids grow up in Philly, and I was doing Cosby's voices on it. I don't think I would do that now, right? And I don't think I would let my 12-year-old, if I had a kid, do that now. So it's like that's my own journey. So it's like I mean. I'm not saying it's not this all encompassing one. Everything is means the same kind of. Excuse of the times, but it does come up every now and then, and especially in the rock world, I use Lennon, but there's a lot of stuff you look back and go, well, that was just part of the lore of that guy. We knew that Steven Tyler did that. He talked about it a lot and we allowed it. And I think as long as I can deal with it, like, all right, I guess part of the victory is we all can acknowledge that was bad
and let's move on. I don't know what to do with what we're and the people we're leaving behind in that. You know what I mean? It's again, I wish I had the right words.
Yeah, no, it is a difficult conversation. I think there's the, as you said, there's the, well, it was a different time, which can just be an excuse, you know? And then I think for me, there's examples like we were talking recently about older eras of entertainment. Like if you worked in clubs, you worked for violent mobsters. I'm not going to stop listening to Sammy Davis Jr. because the only way he had a career, I'm not going to stop listening to Ella Fitzgerald because she made money for violent criminals because every entertainer had no choice. They were an entertainer or they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
They knew or they didn't. They probably knew, but like, what are you going to do? I am so affected by those kinds of things. It's a different world. It was a different time.
Is it possible, like, you know, you measure the intentions of Sammy Davis Jr. and Ella Fitzgerald, two legendary examples of, I even had this in some of my conversations about strike coverage. Some people made the decision to continue to talk about Star Wars, but also put information out about the strikes and also say, hey, this is kind of what we do. We don't want to be in SAG. This is how we make our money. And I had some off-air DM conversations and text messages. And they weren't like asking me, what should I do? They're just like, hey, discuss this with me. And I always came to the thing of like, your intentions are good here. This is where the situation that's going on. You put food on the table with this. You're doing all the things you can to go forward in the best way possible. And then I knew some shows, I knew some people that were just like, ain't nothing changing for me. And that's the issue. And so some of the stuff, and I don't know if maybe that directly relates to what you're talking about in the past of, I don't think Sammy Davis Jr. was taking crowbars to knees and
no
Riviera, you know?
No. In fact, being threatened with the opposite, with some, anyway.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think for me, the art versus artist is, it's a series of questions. It's, you know, who is being harmed in the moment? What am I actively, directly supporting? Is it an actor? Is it a creator? When was it made? All those things are factors for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
On top of all that, I do also think that there's crimes that people commit. And then also I think the speed and the intensity of social media sometimes doesn't allow people to be human. And I don't mean excuse.
Right.
Crimes, harassment, running in abusive set. I am thrilled that a reexamination of Hollywood has started with absolutely necessary conversations about sexual assault and sexual harassment, and has extended to just like, are you an asshole? Do you run an awful set where people are demeaned? That needs to be examined too. So I think there are a ton of things that really need to be examined. But I also do think that social media can put people on pedestals too fast and need them to be perfect.
Yes.
And I think I love art where the art is flawed and human, and people sometimes say dumb things. People say things out of ignorance, not malice, and need a chance to listen and do better. I believe in that. I believe in that we should really, really look at creators as humans. Mm-hmm. And I have some creators I absolutely love, but like every time I see that meme of, not to pick on him, but that meme of, you know, Filoni as the sun.
Oh, yeah.
Like, let's not deify people. He's a human with a wonderful storyteller and a human with flaws. And that's what makes his art interesting, because it's his idiosyncratic passions. And so I think in all of this, I am also really aware of watching out for putting people on a pedestal, deifying them, needing them to be perfect, and then pouncing really hard for a flaw, for a mistake, not for a crime or a proven pattern of abusive behavior, but for a mistake, for a slip, for an ignorance. and giving one another the grace to make mistakes and learn.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great way to kind of maybe end some of the look on it is, you know, we all experience it in life too, of just like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't intend that. Thanks for letting me know. Or, but yeah, that is a byproduct of what I do. Okay. Yeah. Of all those moments and yeah, the human, they're without a doubt, we're in a reactionary society. And I want to give a chance for, I do want to give a chance for the comeback if it's real, right? And that's the hard thing. Even the artist I mentioned, Ryan Adams, I think he's made some strides. I don't know. I haven't researched it. I don't know people who know him directly anymore, but like, all right, so maybe I can monitor that and see where we're at. But I also know some people in the comedy world that have publicly seemed to take that journey, but privately haven't. And and that's why it's okay. Just to, I'm all for the comeback. I'm all for the change because I have changed dramatically. I have grown. We all want to. That's something we should strive to. But in terms of this kind of stuff, because I think you're right, allow them to be human and allow them to grow. And then make sure it's an actual growth too, as part of the complication. It's a complication.
Yeah. And, you know, and if it's something, if it's behavior that you can't abide, you got your personal choice, which we've been talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Any other final thoughts, Ken?
Hey, just, you know, solved it. We solved it. It's easy. Easy issue.
easy issue. No problem. No strong reactions, I'm sure. All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break and we will be back with another great cue that we hopefully have an A for.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And we are back here on our episode, Cues of the Other. We've got a great question from Brian Babcock. Brian says, hello, Joseph, Ken, and Jennifer, if you're there, which I appreciate. We should have been saying Jennifer just had to take the week off. Yeah. She will be back in full force.
That's right.
Brian says, if you're not, hi anyway to Jennifer. That's nice. I want to start with an apology because I always love to hear from all three of you with my cues, but this question is specifically for Joseph. But we do have some great Ken thoughts. Don't worry. Brian says, Joseph, I must say I'm a massive fan of Riff Tracks and Mystery Science Theater 3000 before it. So I was absolutely overjoyed to hear you mention you worked at Riff Tracks. So I've always been curious, how exactly do the scripts for a riff get written? Do you sit down and watch the movie they're riffing, write jokes where you find them appropriate, and put a timestamp, then best jokes wins? Please tell me. I recall you saying you wrote for at least one of the Galaxy Far, Far Away movies. I'm also curious what your favorite joke you wrote was that made it to one of the riffs. And to include Ken and Jen, have you seen any movies that have been riff tracks? If so, what's your favorite one? Thanks, and may the riffs be with you. Brian, thank you very much for the kind question about a past freelance gig that I had. But Ken, I want to start with you. What is your relationship with MST3K and riff tracks?
A little less with riff tracks, so I've seen stuff. But I know that kind of, was the newer version, and I think I saw... Correct me if I'm wrong, the Riff Tracks did The Room.
Right? Mm-hmm. And
So I was there for that at Universal City Walk at the theater. God, that was just hilarious. But I grew up loving Mystery Science Theater 3000 when it found me in that junior high range. It wasn't just, hey, there's some, funny robots being snarky at weird movies. It was the approach. It was the references. It was the different kind of references. And then seeing some of the interviews of them at the time going, well, TV's Frank Conniff has this interest. And so that comes into play. And, these guys, they like sports. So a Ron Savoda Met outfielder reference from 1969 will come in. And that spoke to me in a lot of levels. I've always been kind of especially early as my stand-up was a little bit more reference. Let me make a reference to the War of 1812. It doesn't always work. So trust me. But that just spoke to me, and I was a huge fan of the crew and huge fan of the show. And what a great time to just sit there for like 2 hours on a Saturday and watch an episode. It was a lot of warm memories and helped influence one of the many influences of what came after for me.
It makes sense, especially with you, what you did when you were with Schmo Snow of kind of the movie news, mm-hmm. which is a lot of sort of riffing on the news.
Yeah.
And with, having the style that Mystery Science Theater 3000 could have of, you got a 2-hour movie, a 90-minute movie, and you don't need every reference to land with everyone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can have the big swing jokes that are to include everyone, and then you can delight pockets of people by having this obscure, weird reference that really thrills specific people. It's a great kind of comedy to be able to do, I think. Mm-hmm. So I saw Mystery Science Theater, I think before it moved to national, when it was still just a local Minneapolis early on. And to give people, I'm sure most people know Mystery Science Theater 3000, a human and some robots got their silhouette. They make jokes usually at older movies, because at the time they were the ones that they could get for free or no money. Mystery Science Theater evolved a bunch. And then eventually, quite a while ago, I think over 15 years now, Riff Tracks is over 15 years old. Mm-hmm. Some of the group, the later group for the most part, Mike Nelson, Bill Corbett, Kevin Murphy, started Riff Tracks. And at the time, the innovation was they were mostly selling MP3s that you could time to new movies so that you could riff just straight out of the, you go and rent your DVD and then you queue up your riff tracks. And then they also did some shorts. And I think now almost everything is kind of baked in. You can just buy the whole thing. Anyway, so I have mentioned before, I met Bill Corbett through Minneapolis Theater. Bill came to Minneapolis for a theater writing program and ended up cast as Crow when Trace Ballew left. Then after the show wrapped, he was still living in Minneapolis, reached out to me after having seen a couple of shows that I did about working with them on a project. We wrote a show together that we did at San Francisco Sketchfest. And Bill and I still have some projects that we're tooling around on. But Bill's a friend. If I never did another creative project with him again, Bill is a good family friend. Also, I spent a lot of time with Kevin Murphy. We was doing a lot of different gigs and shows with both Bill and Kevin for a while. I haven't been able to hang out with Kevin as much, but Kevin's a friend. I've hung out with almost everyone from MSD, from MSD3K World. Trace and Frank are both great. J. Elvis Weinstein, absolutely wonderful. Mary Jo Peel, one of the funniest humans to ever walk the earth, as far as I'm concerned. So I've been really, really lucky. And the fans of Riff Tracks and Mystery Science Theater and Misties are intense. So sometimes they're like, you know these humans? Like it's the fame pockets that we have.
Yeah.
And it's funny to sometimes see them feel like, oh, well, man, we're not that famous. And then you turn around and somebody's like, can you sign my baby? Like in bonkers level of adoration for the work that they did. So anyway, out of my friendship and creative work with Bill, Riff Tracks has a bunch of they have two writers that have been there the entire time that write along with the stars. And then they've had different freelance writers over time. So from about 2010 through 2015, on and off again, I was a freelance writer. And then I think they were really looking to zero in on a house style, and I wasn't quite matching their house style. So we had a very amicable parting of the ways. So I don't write for them anymore. I want to be really, really clear on that, but absolutely support them and think the world of them. So to answer the questions about process, they used to do it different back in the MST3K days, and you can find lots of interviews of them talking about it. But for the Riff Tracks process, as a freelance writer, I would get assigned a 10-minute chunk of a movie. And there would be a video with time codes and then a script with time codes. And I would write jokes with the time code. So you include like the little bit of dialogue in the exact time and then your joke. And then all of the pieces from all the different writers would get put together. And then, you know, various people would come through and do smooth out passes is basically how it worked. And the goal was that one should never be sitting down and be able to go, oh, I'm watching Samurai Cop and I can tell these 10 minutes are scrimshaw. Mm. The idea was to write for the mood of Riff Tracks and the personalities of Bill and Kevin and Mike in particular. A part of that is sometimes people would know, like, on this first pass, when a bunch of different writers have 10 or 20 minute chunks, we're probably all going to make that joke. And we just like, I wrote 10 minutes on Terminator Salvation. And that was, you know, after that infamous Christian Bale yelling at the person about the light
for you.
Yeah. So everybody was like, I'm sorry, I did a Christian Bale yelling joke. And it's like, it's fine. We all did. And we'll pick two or three and it'll be fine. So that kind of thing happens a lot. To Brian's question, I wrote on The Force Awakens. That was a ton of fun. Everybody was really happy with that one. That was great. I think in the spirit of it, I'm not going to share the chunk. I think I have in the past, but I'm not going to, because the spirit of it is.
Well, we've definitely talked about it off air. So yes, keep it secret.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was an interesting balance, because I think that at that point they'd riffed a lot of Star Wars. Force Awakens was new. It was, you know, an opportunity for new fans that come in. So I think there was we want this to be accessible. So let's keep the deep dive Star Wars jokes to a minimum. And I think I had one deep dive, like, come on. And they're like, no, we can't do it. Like, which is absolutely fine. Everybody's really happy with that one. And then to Brian's question about ones that I was proud of. So I don't know what state it is in now, but the Riff Tracks site used to have a forum, and they used to have a favorite line section where people could put in favorite lines. Mm. And kind of to check myself to see, like, am I connecting with the audience? I would check that to see if my lines popped up. So and usually one or two lines did, which was, if it made me feel like, okay, I'm connecting to the audience, this is a good barometer for me. I want to connect to the audience. So there's a couple of jokes that I liked that then popped up in the favorite lines discussion, which made me really happy. Awesome. Your mileage may vary because it's comedy. But I wrote on, Return of the King. And I had the section, the bittersweet section. I think I had the second to last 10 minutes.
Before
all the multiple endings, which they did riff on, but the Samwise wedding. And sometimes you do the jokes that are, a lot of people are going to think about this joke, but it's pleasing because it's just across a plate, but they, you know, hope that they didn't ask Frodo to actually be the ring bearer for their wedding joke, which I liked very much. I wrote on Samurai Cop, which if you're a fan of, you know, infamous, not great movies, the Samurai Cop is it's a hell of a movie.
Yeah.
And that one played in they do these simulcasts where they do a live show and then it's put out to all sorts of different theaters. So I was able to attend that one. There's a line I like there where the actual titular Samurai Cop made a lot of jokes about the character not being bright. And he had a line that was a weird line reading of just like, I know you. In the line was, but that's the only letter he knows. a fun one. In my favorite thing I worked on is fun to work on the blockbusters, but they're actually kind of hard because they're loud and fast and there's not space. And honestly, the hardest part of that job is figuring out the spacing to make sure that jokes are coming with the right speed, but responding to a good line to respond to, but not over an explosion and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So the fun ones to write are the old ones with the massive spaces. Myself and another writer worked on a short called The Shapes We Live With, and it's one of those old, I think 1950s explain something to school children. And it really is just explaining shapes at this glacial, amazingly slow pace. And I actually saw that, I was looking this morning, that they've got that one up on YouTube. So if you want to check it out, it's called Riff Tracks, Shapes We Live With. That was probably my favorite thing to write. And when you write these things, you watch it again and again and again to pick your timing and pick your jokes. So go check out Shapes With We Live With and imagine watching it like 20 times in one day. It's a lot of fun and a lot of pain to write those kind of movie riffs.
That's amazing. That's wonderful. Yeah. I remember when Samurai Cop was, when the Riff Tracks was out, I was trying to get to it because I just watched that film at a friend's house, and it's something to behold even without commentary, but
it is amazingly bonkers. It's a great fun time. I recommend that one as well. It's the one that turned out really well across the board.
Well, I love it, man. And look, I think it's one of the genius concepts ever created because it's so simple, but that's deceptive. and it's great.
It's so universal. In the gift of it is people in the MST3K, there's the cinematic Titanic shoot-off. There's still MST3K, various iterations. Joel Hodgson is still doing. Many, 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 many writers have written jokes under this general umbrella of Riff Tracks and Mystery Science Theater 3000. But to me, the enduring power of it and the concept is people work really hard to write the jokes, to space the jokes out well. And then they deliver it absolutely like it's just you and your buddies at home riffing.
Yeah.
And it's what all, I think, great comedians do and all great performers is, I guess not all great performers, but I think a lot of great comedians is make you forget that they are precision masters. I mean, you know this, Ken, from stand-up, right? Of people who can sound absolutely off the cuff like they just thought of it.
Mm-hmm.
They're scratching their belly on stage while they deliver a line that they have perfected over years and years of performance. And it's an utter precision in their performance to make it sound like, it just occurred to me while I'm scratching my belly this one time in Detroit. And no, it's utter precision and made to just sound totally charming and informal. And I think that's the power of my old friends at Riff Tracks.
Absolutely. I remember one night I saw Marc Maron in the original room and it's like, wow, he's just riffing this story. Then I saw him in the main room 20 minutes later. I was like, nope, word for word. That's the same story. Fantastic. But yeah, that's the absolute, like I said, deceptive. This is, we all sit around and do this. And yeah, you do. But this is not that. It's the science of comedy. And that's part of it. So I was count me one of those folks when I found out you worked with Corbett and had involved with some of this stuff. I was one of those sign my baby people too. I have a friend, my friend Brittany, the late great Grant Imahara, made her a life size working Crow T robot that's still sitting in the living room. And I was there that night. He presented it to her, and it was just like we were all like Crow. Yeah, it's just amazing stuff.
I've had some great conversations with Brittany.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that is it. Thank you, Brian, for that question. That was definitely a big other center question. Just looking into our own past and lives and careers. But that is it, Ken.
That is it. That is it. What a fun and deep and, you know, complicated at times. Excuse the other. But that's why we do it. Get to all the angles of life. It's fun for us to explore beyond Star Wars. But it also has a lot to do with Star Wars because it's the themes that are present in that franchise. Thank you all for listening. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are on Threads as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Instagram, YouTube as well. Subscribe over there and see our faces with every episode coming very soon. Podcast is still available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. Just search or find us. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. For me, you can go to my website, kennapsock.com. I got my comedy album out there. I got some music with the Moonagers and more on the way. We got about 6 other songs we can't wait for you to hear. But the first one, Tell Me, is available everywhere and on Bandcamp if you want to support us directly. Joseph, where can they find and follow you and maybe even quite literally?
Yes, you can find me on all the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw. If you can get an invite code to Blue Sky, come find me there. In particular, I'm having lots of fun on Blue Sky. If you want to check out the short horror film that I created with the help of lots of other great people, Ken included, that is called The Nightmare Adorable. It's going to be playing at the Sin City Horror Fest in Las Vegas Saturday. I cast my eyes over to the calendar, Saturday, December 2nd at 4 p.m. Info and details on all that, including the Q&A that I will be there for, is on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. That is it. The cues have been aid.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.